I'm Kay Puttock for KJOI Community Radio, and this is KJOI's Heart of Iowa, a program featuring a patchwork quilt of artists, public speakers, and individuals of note in Central Iowa. Today, my guest is singer-songwriter Jen McClung, who's come to our studio to record a special concert for the week of Valentine's Day. I'm very happy to welcome Jen McClung. I think of her as our own Jen McClung because she lives here in Ames, but not forever, I think. She hasn't always, so we'll talk about that later. But Jen has very graciously agreed to come in and do a pre-Valentine's concert for us here. She says she really likes dark love songs, so it seemed appropriate. And she's just recently completed a tour for her album Wildfire, which... Well, why don't you talk a bit about that album, Jen?
Sure. Thanks, Kay. And I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me. The album itself, called Wildfire, was based around the concept of needing to sometimes burn everything down to be able to start over and to have growth again, you know, as in much as in the wild, the natural world, where there's certain trees and species of plants that rely on fire to survive and to continue to grow. So I thought that was kind of a fitting metaphor for us as, I think, human beings too. Periodically, we need to burn stuff down in our life. We need to get rid of some of the old growth that's hanging around that's not doing anything anymore.
And the dead wood.
The dead wood, and return some of those nutrients to the soil and, you know, warm the soil up so that new things can germinate. So that was the premise behind the album. And the tour this summer was really well received. The album was really well received as we traveled around. We went all the way out to California. I took the whole family on the road.
Yeah, your two sons as well.
So it was my two sons, Finn, who is 4, and Will, who is 11, and then my husband, Jim. The four of us hit the road and had a family vacation / road trip. And, you know, I don't know that I would do it that way again. It was a lot of fun. The boys were wonderful. And, you know, as brothers, you stick anybody in a small space together for a long period of time, they're bound to grow together. And the boys really did over the summer. So that was a neat thing to see. But it was a little stressful to have to go between mother, you know, having my mother's hat on and my performer hat on. And sometimes I would have both of them on at the same time.
Oh, yes. That would be very difficult.
Yes, when the kids were often with us at the shows. So I would be keeping one eye on Finn, who was, we allowed him to play on the iPad only during shows on the tour. So that was like a special treat and would keep him occupied.
Smart move.
For the most part, it worked very well, and he was very good, as good as a 4-year-old can be in those situations. Except for one of our shows in Sacramento when the iPad died. It ran out of battery, and then it was a full-on meltdown. And Jim had to get off the stage and go take – I just kept playing. Jim set his bass down and went over and took care of Finn and spent a little time with him and then came back and just jumped right into playing again.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
So I'm standing there on the stage looking down at them going, oh, my God, I can't believe my son is doing this. This is so embarrassing while trying to sing and play, you know, and be really present as a performer. I think one of the great lessons I learned this summer from performing so much was really how much energy and focus it takes.
I'm sure, yes.
To do shows here and there, you know, in kind of around locally, it's a luxury. But on the road, you only have so much energy. And the act of performing takes an incredible amount of focus. An incredible amount of energy to be fully present. And that was a little challenging to do with my kids there, but they had a good experience. And I know we're going to look back and all of the bad stuff is just going to sort of
go away,
disappear.
Yes.
And we're going to have great memories of, oh, remember that summer we went on tour with Mom? So
that'd be a wonderful memory.
Yeah. So it was a wonderful tour. We met lots of wonderful people. Played a lot of Unitarian churches along the way. They were kind enough to host us and met some wonderful people that way and had some great home hospitality. We stayed with a lot of people in their homes rather than in hotels, which saved us a lot of money.
I'm sure.
On food and on lodging.
Oh, well, that was there, and there's four of you to put up.
So yes, yes, yes. Huh. And, you know, each house had its own kind of culture. There was some places that had cats or dogs or both, or mm-hmm. other babies or older kids, and the boys just kind of had to adapt to wherever they were at. Mm-hmm. And they did. They did. They were amazing.
Yeah. Okay, well, would you like to play us maybe the title song?
Or? Sure, sure. This is Wildfire.
Take a walk outside with me, very far as the eye can see. They say nothing's what it seems, embers hiding where we can't see. Winds are coming from the north, and there's no telltale sign of rain. The winds are starting to pick up. Stand with me and watch the
singing that, it seemed to me very, very literary. The beautiful metaphors. And I know you have an MFA in writing.
Mm-hmm. In creative writing and poetry and fiction. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's what really struck me, because that was my field too.
Thank you.
And I know you're a musician also, and a very good one. But yeah. So I was hesitant to mention that. But what I noticed is the very concrete
concrete images of nature. And although, as you clearly pointed out, there's a metaphorical, obviously a metaphorical dimension, but you're not explicit about that. Anyone can make of it their own burning of whatever they want.
That's the goal as a songwriter, is to make songs specific enough that people are engaged and interested, but universal enough that they can insert their own story.
Right. You do that without being vague at all, because it's so precise with the natural imagery.
Yeah, thank you. Not all the songs come out that well. No, for every good song that comes out, there's, 10 crappy ones.
Well, that certainly is not crappy. That was absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
Now, since I started off by talking about the literary or lyrical qualities, I know you mentioned that one of your parents was a musician. A professional musician.
My dad is a pedal steel guitar player. And we lived in Southern California. He was an active player. Well, he's still an active player and teacher, but he has since moved up to Washington, where there's not as much gigging action going on.
Oh,
but
okay.
From the time I was, I mean, I guess before I was born, when I was in my mom's stomach, I was going to my dad's gigs and listening to the music. And, as a 2-year-old going to the bars back when they still had smoky bars. Uh-huh. smoking was legal. And I just sort of absorbed that kind of culture, I think, but the idea too of doing music as a performer and watching other people do it and knowing from a really young age, I want to do that too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was kind of an inherent thing for me. My first performance was a talent show. My first public, singing performance was a talent show in either fourth or fifth grade in elementary school. And my dad and I did a Judd's piece.
Oh, the two of you together?
Yeah, we did. The song Young Love.
Uh-huh.
A really, really beautiful little piece with a great story. And my dad backed me up on pedal steel, and he had a kind of a real basic track recorded, with just the guitar and stuff. And I sang, and we brought all that together. And that was the first time that I really put myself out there. And it was a very reaffirming experience. The boy I liked gave me a flower afterwards. And then quickly ran away.
Yes, and also when you were growing up, it was very fashionable for females with guitars. Well, I remember when I was in college or graduate school, Buffy St. Marie and Joan Baez, of course,
they were the
icons.
Well,
that was something new. I mean, when Joan Baez sort of hit people's consciousness, that was something new. Just a girl with a guitar.
Yeah, and I benefited from that, not so much directly, but the people that I was listening to. Tori Amos and Sarah McLachlan and Sean Colvin, they were products of that generation with Joan Baez and Joni Mitchell and people like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they were influenced by that first wave of folk girl singers, singer-songwriters. And so I feel like I was sort of maybe the third wave, influenced by the people who were influenced by those original folks.
Mm-hmm. And you teach also at Iowa State, right?
I do.
Native American Studies?
I teach in the American Indian Studies program.
Mm-hmm. Do you have Native American ancestry?
I have some Choctaw in my family, but I don't claim any tribal affiliations. It's not something that I was connected with, and it's not something that I am active in the tribal community now. So,
I noticed, though, on your... the album Wildfire, you're holding, well, not the album, the little video that went with it. On you're holding feathers and playing with a couple of feathers.
Oh, yeah. Those were chicken feathers, actually. We were out at Andrew's farm, and he had some chickens at the time, and I've just always loved feathers.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have anything to do with Native American ancestry or anything.
Okay.
I just love feathers. I'd wear them all the time if I could get away with it.
And I'm not sure what is a pedal steel guitar?
A pedal steel guitar is sort of like a lap steel. It's a guitar that lays on your lap, although with the pedal steel it has its own legs. And the strings are raised so that you're not fretting the chords in the way that you do a guitar. You're not pressing down hard like that, but instead you're playing it with a slide in one hand and picks in the other hand, and there are then pedals beneath on the bottom that raise and lower the strings to make that kind of twangy.
Wow. That's an unusual instrument. I don't think I've ever seen one.
Really?
Well, maybe I've seen one without realizing.
You probably have, and they're more common, especially in listening to music, than most people would recognize. I always wanted to learn it, but my dad was like, no. You should pick up something else because this instrument is too complicated.
it's nice to have something of your own too. It's different.
It is. My dad played guitar too, but not very much. Uh-huh. And so that was his thing and this was my thing. And it was so wonderful, as I matured into my kind of teenage years where I was really starting to write my own songs and performing at coffee shops and small venues around LA. He would play with me. And we would do duets. We sang together, and he would back me up on pedal steel or dobro. He also plays dobro. That's a similar instrument, but without pedals and as many strings. We had a wonderful time. That was something that brought the two of us very close, mm-hmm. and was a connection that we had.
Where did you grow up, by the way?
In Southern California.
Oh,
in
right,
the LA area.
Yeah. And when did you come to Ames?
2008. The summer of 2008.
Was that to teach at Iowa State? No.
No, not in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I had just finished my master's degree at Chatham University in Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. Pennsylvania. And it was there that I had met Jim. So after I finished my program, Jim, my husband, lived here. And so I moved to Iowa to be with him. And uh-huh. I started teaching at DMAC and waitressing.
Oh, okay.
Because God knows you can't make a living on community college teaching. Not as an adjunct anyway, so. And then it wasn't long before I was able to get in at Iowa State.
Oh, good. Yeah. Yeah, Jim, you mentioned Jim. He's also your booking agent, right?
Yeah. He was responsible for booking the tour this summer. Mm-hmm. I'm horrible at that stuff. At marketing.
Well, it's good to.
Promotion.
Good to have a bit of division of labor.
Yes.
And you also play with him as a band, as a sort of separate entity.
We did a while ago. We had a project called the Gatehouse Saints, mm-hmm. and that's kind of retired. For the time being, we both moved on to other projects.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, we realized, too, that as married people, it was good to have some more separation than mm-hmm. we did. You know, mm-hmm. everything we did was together, music, teaching. He teaches in American Indian Studies as well. So we realized after a while of doing the music thing together that, you know, we probably need to separate some of our interests and do our things on our own because the tension, whatever we were dealing with, you know, in our marital life would inevitably bleed into our performances and vice versa. You know, I'd get annoyed with him for something on stage, and that would carry over into our uh-huh. home life. Uh-huh. So we realized it was not such a good idea to do that after a while. For us anyway. For some people, it worked. Mm-hmm. I think we need to try something different. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go do my thing. You go do your thing and we'll be good.
Okay. Have you got a song about that?
Oh, not specifically, but I do have a song about Jim, actually, called When You're Gone. He was on the road for a while doing poetry gigs, you know, because he's a poet. And he was, I think, going to Montana or Wyoming. I think it's Wyoming to do a poetry gig. And he was driving there and he left really early one morning. And I was very sad. And so I wrote this little love song for him out of missing him. And you know, that was good. He was going to do his poetry stuff, which mm-hmm. was different than our music stuff. And so, that worked out well. The absence makes the heart grow fonder sort of situation. This is When You're Gone. This hole in our
sweet, sweet dreams. No, I won't stand here and fall apart at the top of the stairs. The silence weighs more than I care to admit. And as much as I complain,
brought tears to my eyes, really.
Sweet little love song.
Yeah, beautiful. That, would you call that a dark song? That's not really dark.
No, not that one.
No.
Not that one. That one's one of the happier ones I've written.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, those come every once in a while, but not very often.
Would you like to play a dark one?
Oh, sure. I will I'll play one called I'm Your Mary. I usually do this one on piano, but I didn't bring the piano with me this morning, so... So this is a very dark love song about a boy who I was in love with at one point, many, many years ago, who wanted to paint me. He was an artist.
Love, you ask too much. Drawing halos around my head, but I can't help it. I burst apart, lighting up the darkest parts of your heart. I am your Mary. Lay down tonight. Well, I can hold you for a little while, but I can't help you find what you need. I am not that holy. I am not that deep. I know you hurt me, because I know you. You can lie about your scars, There are no secrets left between us. There are no words. There are just stars in the sky. I am your Mary, lay down tonight. And I can hold you for a little while. But I can't help you find what you need. I am not that holy. I am not that deep. So you pose me one last time, cross my hands over my heart in the lamplight, to take a picture in your mind of what you wanted to remember of this night. I am your Mary, I lay down tonight, and I can hold you for a little while, but I can't help you find what you need. I am not that holy, I am not that deep. I was your Mary for many nights.
My guest is Jen McClung, who we like to think of as our local singer-songwriter, but she's not really ours. She's nationally famous, I guess, and she's just completed a tour with her new album, Wildfire. And she's agreed to come in today to do a special Valentine's season concert for us. So she's playing love songs, which she really likes to write, too. Now, when you were 16, you were offered a record contract by a major record company.
I was. I was playing in a little coffee place in Hollywood, and the vice president at the time of A&R from Warner Brothers just happened to be there. And, you know, it was one of those, like, dream stories, like, oh, you get discovered. Uh-huh. You know, I'd been playing a long time by that point, but he took an interest in my music, and we met and kind of hashed out a development contract. And in the end, I decided to turn it down because at that point I was pretty fiercely independent and felt like, well, if I sign this record contract, I'm selling out and I'm selling my soul and they're going to take creative control. And I was very much invested in the idea of doing things my own way. Mm-hmm. So I walked away. Uh-huh. I left it and I said, you know, I'm going to go do some other stuff and I'm going to continue playing and writing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go to college and then I'll check in with you after I'm done.
And did you?
I did. And he wasn't there by the time I was done. I released my first record on my own. And then mm-hmm. I contacted him and said, hey, how you doing? Here's a copy of my new CD. And it turned out he wasn't there any longer. Oh. So
Is that really true that if you had, of course you were very young and I can see at that age why you didn't want to tie yourself down like that, but do people that sign records, do they really lose their independence and their...
Yeah, very much so.
Have some concrete examples of that.
If you look at any pop star, it's a business. The record companies are in it first and foremost to make money, and it's great if they can do it with good art, but they are invested in making music that's going to sell. And so that's music that appeals to the widest variety, the widest audience as possible. And it tends to be the stuff that we hear on, you know, the top 20, top 10 countdown, which is, you know, it's okay stuff, but it's very poppy. Not that there's anything wrong with pop, but you get to
sounding all the same, really.
Yeah, it sounds all the same. And I knew that if I were to have gone that path, my music would have been changed. I would have been sort of ushered down this path towards pop music.
Mm-hmm.
And there are just tons and tons of stories of independent, you know, sort of non-mainstream artists who sign record contracts and then end up just hating it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have the artistic control taken away. I mean, you sign a contract, you agree, I'm going to make such and such number of albums, and you're committed to that. You're mm-hmm. bound to that. Mm-hmm. And so if you make something that the record company doesn't think is going to sell, they chuck it out and say, start over. So. I wanted to be put out what I wanted, basically.
Do you have an example of a song that you could play or that you'd like to play that shows that independence that you think might not sell?
You know, the last one that I played,
that one,
I'm Your Mary,
right.
That one is definitely, you wouldn't hear that on pop radio.
And that would be a great loss.
I think so too. Every once in a while I get surprised by what's on pop music. But that's one that definitely would have been dropped. But, I have another one about, it's another love song, but sort of looking back, a retrospect song on how, when we look back on relationships or any period of our life, it looks very different in hindsight mm-hmm. than it does. And again, this is something that doesn't follow the usual, verse, chorus, verse, bridge, verse, chorus, chorus formula that most pop songs are written in, so I doubt this one would have been picked up for radio play. Your memory grows sweeter, your eyes darker blue. Those stories I remember glisten like morning dew, like the one where we were driving north on Highway 1 on the coast of Santa Barbara in the spellbinding sun. We yearned to know where the thieves and wolves would run. We yearned to know if two blue skies make one. Do you still the tub is still familiar, or do you still shut out the light? And the burn grows deeper, and the dreams get stranger. Your memory grows sweeter every year, every year, every year. Every year I'm rewriting the truth. Every year I'm upgrading the view. Every year I'm silencing the black and blue. Every year time photoshops the truth. Yes,
violence of the hand in you my life. In your eyes, the care with which you carried my light. In your eyes, the trace of another life.
Yes, that is not the kind of thing you usually hear, although it's so true.
Yeah. I think pop radio, they do miss out on a lot of things. Mm-hmm. You can't knock it too much it speaks to people.
Sure.
I think of music as a kind of ministry, and it ministers to people in various ways. And if it's pop music that speaks to your soul and your heart, sure.
Now, talking of ministry, you said you sang at a lot of Unitarian churches.
Yeah.
Have you got a song that, you know, seems appropriate for...
I do.
And if it's also appropriate for Valentine's Day, that's...
I do, actually. It's called Let It Go. A funny story. As I was playing this on tour all summer, I had to preface this song by saying, it's not the Let It Go from Frozen. The movie Frozen, because I would say, okay, this next song is called Let It Go. And there's that really famous song from Frozen, which, you know, came out last year. And all the parents know it because all the kids listen to it over and over and over and over again. And they looked at me like, you're going to play that song? I can't stand that song. So I had to say, don't worry. We're not going to sing Frozen here. But this is my version of Let It Go, which, by the way, was written long before Frozen's Let It Go. Someone mentioned, well, you should just change the title.
You got there first.
Right. It's kind of funny anyways. But this is a song that was originally written for a church service at our fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
That Andrew Williams was doing on forgiving yourself and sort of letting things go.
Oh, right.
Go.
I remember that. Yes.
Yeah.
This is the Unitarian Fellowship of Ames.
Yes.
I think this is the first time I've mentioned my own church on the radio. So that's allowed, I guess.
The UU of Ames. But he had this really lovely ceremony designed as part of the service where people were to walk up to the front, and there were two bowls, one with rocks, like small pebbles and rocks, and one with a bowl of water. And the idea was you would take a rock, pick it up, and drop it in the water, sort of symbolically letting go of the things that you've been carrying around.
The burdens.
The burdens, yeah. Mm, and right. And forgiving yourself and kind of moving on. So that's what that's where this one came from. I've been dragging tears around, put them in a suitcase to carry around. I count the years lost like a tree. Brings every regret now circling me. Hey, yeah. Watch the way the distance grows, and every year the weight gets heavier now. I'm bending balance overload. Just a stone's throw from the bottom now. Hey, yeah, yeah, hey. Thank you.
now. Let it go, let it go. And I'll follow where it goes. Let it go, let it go. Let the river take this stone. Let it go, let it go. It's time to set this down. The suitcase full of regrets I've been carrying around, I don't know even where to start. One small stone from a broken heart, from a broken heart. Hey, hey, hey.
We're really lucky to have someone that composes songs specially for a particular service.
It's a good challenge. You know, you get bored of writing your own stories after a while. So it's nice to have someone come and say, hey, can you see about writing a song about this particular theme or story or topic? And as I grow older and get, less and less interested in my own story because I've told it so many times, I find myself picking up other people's stories and writing about those.
Yeah, you do write quite a lot of songs about children too, and that's.
I have some. I don't actually. I this last album wrote a song for Finn about my experience of motherhood, and it's one that I is a piano song. I've never actually tried to play it on guitar, but I could give it a try and we could see how it goes.
Be something new.
Yes, okay. So, yeah, bear with me. It's called More to Give. And it was, for me, becoming a mother was challenging. Some women, I think, are just better suited for it than others.
We're all meant to be, but
maybe. I don't know.
I mean, that's the myth that everyone's meant to be.
Well, I think it is a myth.
Yes.
Because I don't think
we're all meant to be, but we're not.
I don't think every woman is suited to be.
Certainly not right off the bat.
No, and perhaps not ever. And mm-hmm. the same for men. Not all men are suited to be fathers. I think it's an assumption, you know, that's sort of hardwired into us. But, you know, we've all seen those mothers and fathers that you just know they should not have a parenting license. So not that I was that bad, but I wasn't sure that I wanted to have kids before Finn came along. And then Finn did come along, and I embraced the experience, and I was kind of traumatic. We had a really, just from the get-go, we had a really traumatic birth experience where I had eclampsia. And
Now, what is that exactly?
They don't actually know a whole lot about it, but your blood pressure goes very, very high. And preeclampsia is something that many women experience, which is also kind of hypertension. But in the case of eclampsia, for me, it was full blown, and it just happened like right away, just out of the blue. I lost my vision and then went into seizures and then into a coma, and they had to deliver Finn by emergency C-section. So it was a very rough start into motherhood.
Yes.
In a very literal way.
And then when there's this new person in the world, then you're completely out of it because you've had a major operation.
Yeah, yeah. And it wasn't a regular C-section where, they did a little cut and I was awake. I was in a coma. Uh-huh. I was totally, totally gone. And I don't remember anything from the first probably 6 weeks of Finn's life. Hmm. Thank God we have photos. That's my memory. Mm-hmm. So this is about those kinds of challenges. But for me, it ended up being a very sweet thing, a bittersweet thing. You know, mm-hmm. you give up yourself as a parent, and that's really challenging sometimes. But you also, the love that you get back from a child is like nothing else.
Right.
It's like nothing else. Okay, this is going to be an experiment on radio.
Yes, no, I'll less. Just repeat, just in case people have just tuned in. This is a song that Jen doesn't usually play on the guitar, but she hasn't got her piano with us, so she's going to give it a try on the guitar.
All at once, a flash of light, the rain. Rain came and you arrived, and like a flood, you changed the lay of the land, leveled my hopes with the smell of your sweet baby skin. And they all said that life would change, and so it has, and so it will. And I'm no longer afraid, 'cause I've got a heart two times the size of Rome. I've got drool on everything I own. I've got pictures of cats that don't look like cats. I've got handprints all over the glass. I've got hands that know how to hold. I've got sweet little fingers and toes. I've got arms that know how to soothe. I've got more to give, more to give than to lose. Before you came, my heart measured one by one. The house was clean, things in their place. Now there's shoes all over the floor. And two by two and three by three, I stretched till I thought I would. But you pushed and pulled and you dug down deep till you made a mother of me. And they all said that life would change. And so it has, and so it will. But I'm no longer afraid, 'cause I've got a heart two times the size of Rome. I've got drool on everything I own. I've got pictures of cats that don't look like cats. I've got handprints all over the glass. I've got hands that know how to hold. I've got sweet little fingers and toes. I've got arms that know how to soothe. I've got more to give than Zulu.
Now, that was lovely ending. I wasn't expecting that at all.
Oh, thank you. Sometimes okay. Surprise endings are the best.
do you have a song suitable to end for Valentine's Day?
I do. It is actually, if it's all right, it's a Leonard Cohen song, so I don't know how that goes with...
I think that's all right.
It's okay. Okay. This is probably the sexiest song that I know.
Okay.
It's called Dance Me to the End of Love.
Dance me to your beauty with a burning violin. Dance me through the panic till I'm gathered safely in. Lift me like an olive branch and be my home. Dance me to the end of love. Dance me to the end of love. Oh, let me see your beauty when the witnesses are gone. Let me feel you moving like they do in Babylon. Show me slowly what I only know the limits of. Dance me to the end of love. Dance me to the end of love. And dance me to the wedding now. And dance me on and on. Dance me very tenderly and dance me very long. We're both of us beneath our love and both of us above. Dance me to the end of love. Dance me to the end of love. And dance me to the children who are asking to be born. Dance me through the curtains that our kisses have outworn. Raise a tent of shelter now, though every thread is torn. Dance me to the end of love. Dance me to the end of
Thank you, Jen McClung.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to KHOI's Heart of Iowa, a program featuring a patchwork quilt of artists, public speakers, and individuals of note in central Iowa. Today, my guest has been singer-songwriter Jen McClung with a special program of pre-Valentine's Day music. Most of the songs you heard today are by Jen herself, but she ended with a song by Leonard Cohen. Our theme music is by Leo Kottke. Today's show was engineered by Rick Morrison. I'm Kay Puttock, and until next time, goodbye from the heart of Iowa.